This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us this morning from Hawaii Island is Mayor Harry Kim. Morning, Mayor.
Good morning to you.
You know, I have to say that we've had this very wonky weather, and I know you folks are dealing with, water restrictions, I think, on Hamakua side. I don't know exactly what happened, some kind of equipment failure. And then you had the Kona side dealing with the fires this weekend.
Well, basically, the water problem is different from other islands or places. Our water problem was caused because we all have deep well water. And so when you take away power, it takes away ability to pump the water. But power was restored this morning, so the water situation crisis is over now.
Well, you folks certainly have had your hands full with what happened last year. And I know, you know, it was encouraging that the House lawmakers support the $60 million to your island to help with this disaster relief.
Oh, it's a welcome news. It's one of the most important things. We have a lot of, as we say, fixing up to do. And for some, unfortunately, all the money in the world will not fix up as far as what they lost. But our responsibility in regards to roads and water and those things will be able to begin the planning and therefore the implementation once we're ready, because all of it calls for a tremendous amount of cash match. Regardless of how much the federal government sponsors, do not sponsor, they call for a match of a certain percentage. And for a small county government like Hawaii County, you know, that money is not there unless we get this kind of assistance. And now we have confirmation it will come.
And we have been hearing from federal and state officials that this recovery is going to take years, maybe decades.
Unfortunately for some, it will never come. And for those who are not from here, or even if you are from here, it's hard to visualize something that was so, I do mean it, probably God's gift of beauty, you know, to be covered by black rock that is jagged and up and down, an average of 60 to 80 feet, and move the ocean front as far back as 800-900 yards away from what it was, from beautiful corals, et cetera, et cetera. Change into this huge mass of what I used to coin many years ago as a black glacier. And that's what it is. And it will take another few hundred years for it to turn back into something of beauty.
Well, I have to tell you, our phone lines are all filled. Lots of folks want to talk to you. You're more popular than Mayor Caldwell. But we do have one call from Oshi from Puna. What's on your mind? What would you like to talk to the mayor about?
Well, as he mentioned, is the connection good? Do you hear me well?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
Okay. As the mayor mentioned, the lava recovery is ongoing. And I live on the Big Island in the Puna District. And I live in a lava-locked area. It's approximately 3 square miles. And there are 50-plus homes and 16 acres of agricultural land. It's still lava-locked, and my husband and I are living at our house. I'm 68 years old, but we have to walk over the lava. And last time I walked over carrying a gas can, my neighbor was carrying a car battery. It's a little arduous to not have a road. And I have to just interject, and then I'll get to my question, is that I'm very familiar with this lava, and it's really the part covering the highway. It looks under 20 feet. It's rubbly. I know it can be hot underneath, but they have built a road to geothermal over the same lava flow, and successfully, it looks like a superhighway. But anyway, we really need Highway 132 open promptly. And without the emergency declaration, we're all of us here are really afraid that it's going to take a long time. And we're just looking for a temporary road. And our houses are deteriorating, and, you know, insurance is getting canceled. And I guess so our big question is, when are the bulldozers going to come? We greatly, greatly appreciate that the mayor Kim said opening Highway 132 is the number one priority. But what we really want to see is some action that is being taken, like, yes, we're surveying. Yes, we've got the federal money. This is when we anticipate it coming, because we are just in limbo land here. That's the question. Thank you.
I'll answer that, if I may. First of all, you know, no amount of words or anything can express, I think, the hardship that she described. It was, truthfully, it was even, I lost my place. It's almost even easier to accept the passing of something special rather than be isolated sometimes. You know, it's a difficult thing to explain. But in regards to your specific question, we are bound by federal laws because that's where the money comes from. Many, many months, I think it's very difficult for people to understand, including a lady that was on the phone, that this is the first time, and I do mean the first time, that since 1983, January 3rd, that there has been no volcanic activity from Kilauea. If you go to Kona, especially, where they have been inundated with fog, and sometimes Oahu would get the south wind and they would get it, Kona forgot what clean air looks like and smell like as far as horizon, beauty, et cetera. And now you talk to people in Kona, and there's a special, you know, joy of people seeing what was, because, again, there's no fog in the air. Even Hilo, I think, even Puna, which is my home, you know, there's a little special cleanliness in the air without the tons of sulfur dioxide being emitted by Halemaumau, Pu'o, Kupaina, and Fisher 8 and other fishes. At that time when Kalapana was unfortunately lost, where we lost Black Sand Beach and Warm Springs, Queen's Bath, rather, et cetera, and hundreds and thousands of individuals losing something forever. Agreement was made by the one experts we depend on, Hawaii Volcano Observatory, that we must wait for a reasonable time to make sure that this phase of eruption is over because it is that unpredictable. There was no magic to 6 months. HVO scientists stated at that time they can make a fairly good assessment whether this is going to be short-term or long-term. Understanding this, regardless of what agreement was made, they have told us Kilauea is the most active volcano in the world, and it can erupt and probably will erupt again sometime somewhere within Puna area, and that's where Kilauea affects. So that agreement was 6 months. In the meantime, as she has stated, that, you know, we have identified with FEMA that Highway 132 will be the primary one to start with. The Pohiki one was just done as a short term to make that place available for beachgoers as well as property owners. In regards to what you said, why can't we start this or start that? We have already identified it. I think she read it in a paper. We have already worked with FEMA that we cannot, under any circumstances, make it a permanent road because without doubt, we will hit hot lava in a very, very short depth. As she knows, it goes from the top of the area there all the way down to the ocean area of what we call Four Corners. But before I forget with PGV, understand that PGV made a special arrangement with the private property owner of the Lyman family, which owned 100% of the property there. They gave PGV, because they leased the land from PGV, to go over their property to make their road at their risk at 100% of 100%. All of the risk is theirs. All of the expenses is theirs. So we had nothing to do with it except they had to comply with all grading laws established by county and state laws, which they did. In their doing that, they were asked, would you make your road accessible to all farmers or anyone else that possibly could use your road to get ingress, egress to their private property, and they agreed to do so. So I can understand your frustration of seeing them do that, and we have not done anything on 132 yet, but because it is their right and their money. On 132, arrangements have been made with FEMA that we will establish a private road at this time, And what we're going to have to wait a little while longer is we're going to do some boring to see where we can make it as level as possible. We do have to resurvey, and that will begin shortly, so we stick on government lands.
How soon will you do the boring?
Pardon?
How soon will you do the boring test?
I think we already done some boring in the shallow areas to make sure that we don't get hot lava there, and that's near the surface of what we call Four Corners and as a Fupuhiki Junction. In the middle of the area there, which is quite high, it's way beyond 20 feet. I think we're going to wait until the day Public Works determines they can do it safely.
Okay. We do have another call from Puna. Sue, you're on the line. What's on your mind?
Aloha. I've lived in Lower Puna since 97. Through the road construction, always a challenge, a flood in mid-2000s. 2014 and this, and I think Kauai County does a great job with limited resources. I think Harry Kim and Daryl Oliveira and the present civil defense people, Billy Kanoi and Harry, with very limited money, they've just done a great job keeping us all safe. Mahalo.
Well, thank you for that, Sue. Mayor, you've got fans.
You know, I tell you, I totally understand, and I've had this job as for civil defense in my first eruption that I was responsible for, you know, was back in 1977. And I'll tell you this, for all the listeners out there, I try to say some of it in writing, but you cannot believe, understand how grateful I am, the warmth, support, the graciousness of people. I'll tell you a very short story. I lived on Kalapana for about 3 weeks during that eruption. I slept in my car all of that. And every morning I had small command post, first time exposing this, somebody, and I still haven't found out who, somebody would bring a small bouquet of flowers and place it in my command post every day. And as I don't know how often, but many times they would even accompany that with a small plate of cookies. And that's how lucky I am working here.
That's the Big Island, yes. We do have another line, another call coming from John. You have a question about housing?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, Harry's the name, and how are you, sir?
My name is John Peeney. I have a few questions about housing. I live in Kulamano Elderly Housing. And the first question is, why does housing give contract management companies to pick the cheapest bid for your management company, which really isn't the best because they don't get the job done? The second question is, they put a fence around our complex, and they never put gates or the driveway. They say it's for security purposes. How do you have security purpose when they can walk through the parking lot and get right on the property? And not only that, housing got $1.6 million Pella grant for upgrade for Kulamano, and it seems like all they're doing is cosmetic work and nothing doing any work on the interior of the units, which is basically more important than putting a fence up around the property.
All right, I'll answer you this way, John. First, on the bidding process, generally speaking, yes, the county government, unless you can document why, or in regards to the first lowest bidder. But in this particular case of Kulamano, that's not really the problem. Problem is people are qualified to run the project. For many of the listeners who do not know Kulamano, that has nothing to do with the eruption because that's north of Hilo, the Papaikoa area, and that is a housing project for affordable housing. In regards to the complaints you have as far as those things of fencing or security, I'd be of ignorance to try to answer that for you now, but I invite you on this outside of this program. Please contact my office if you have specifics. I promise you we will follow up.
And if you're just joining the conversation, we are talking with Hawaii County Mayor Harry Kim. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Mayor, we did have folks email us actually last night. Jeffrey from Volcano says that he drives State Highway 11 daily between Hilo and Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and he's just appalled by the amount of littering along the roadside. He says the national park is the biggest visitor attraction in the state. What an embarrassment. So his question is to you, Mayor, what can be done about this problem? He suggests maybe having folks that are on community service put in some hours to help with the highway cleanup.
Oh, boy. You know, that's more than a pet peeve. This is my home from birth. And I think people know this is your home from birth. You have a love for the place that is special. And to see people of, you know, the littering and other abuses sometimes is so disheartening. In regards to what Jeff is proposing, that and many other things, you know, I have no authority, obviously, that suggestion, which I've heard different times, and maybe we'll have someone pursue it with the courts, you know, as a form of penalty. But we do have good litter laws. The fact point is we do not have the type of manpower enforcement, you know, wing to really enforce that. At the best, I think, enforcement is for people, first of all, to be our eyes and ears and turn people in if they can without, you know, putting themselves in a confrontational position. Secondly, and most important, is for us to teach that littering is just not acceptable.
Right, and I don't know what more we can do to kind of drill that in to Malama the Aina.
It is more than, I agree with Jeff, it's very embarrassing, it's disgusting, every word you want to use, and when you see the type of littering that goes on, including by, you know, squatters in regards to the rubbish that is made and left there, that homelessness is almost an excuse sometimes for that kind of disrespect. Regardless of the economic situation, we don't have to treat the island as if it was their private rubbish dump.
And, Mayor, you talked earlier with our contributing reporter, Sherry Bracken, and you talked about that issue of homelessness. I believe you had mentioned that somehow maybe Mauna Kea could be part of the solution. Can you explain more of your thinking about that?
First of all, going on the homelessness, a little different, but I don't think much different than other counties' emphasis. Naturally, money is an issue, and I'm very grateful for the state, Governor Ige, in regards to committing support in our program. We divided our program of the homelessness into two so-called categories. First of all, the homeless. We'll work with the state and the federal to do everything we can to help those who want and need help. But there is another segment that we have to bring out publicly for those who choose this lifestyle as what they want in life. And that means to live off of public properties or private properties. And we've stated publicly, you know, that be aware that the lands are private and public lands are not your private rubbish dump. Not your private toilet or your private camping area. And I think this is becoming a bigger problem than even the homeless, which is a severe problem. But because the other problem, we've had children and others endangered because of type of litter that is left there. In regards to the Mauna Kea issue, as we share it back and all in that interview, it's not directly connected, but all it was care of the land of Mauna Kea and no more precious than any other place of the state of Hawaii, as was told to her. Not to say that it is, Mauna Kea is not special, but to many people, and I totally understand that, you know, the whole state and the whole island is sacred to us.
I see. Okay, so it was more meant as a kind of a an example.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, I'm trying to get people to know that Mauna Kea is a big issue, that Mauna Kea people should get involved in it and know what the issues are and do what they can to, you know, to maintain a good solution to it.
Should something more be done to help the Department of Hawaiian Homelands with all the property that they own up in that area, if any of it can be developed?
Oh, yeah. I, you know, that's one of the big and easy people to pick on Hawaiian homelands. And, you know, these are lands dedicated in part for income, like, you know, for lease lands, and others is, you know, to make homes available, land available and homes available for those eligible. And a lot of it, obviously, I think we meaning those responsible, I'm not, both responsible, trying lately is the past few years, are really trying to be better instead of concentrating on other big land use or commercial use. And I think the answer question here is how much money is allocated within their budget to develop more homes. And we work with them as best as we can to be a good partner, we meaning county government.
Okay, well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. You can join the discussion with Hawaii Mayor Harry Kim by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, Andrew Yang sees a dark downside to technology.
We're blasting away millions of retail jobs, call center jobs, fast food jobs, truck driving jobs.
So he's running for president on this platform.
Universal basic income, digital social credits, a psychologist in the White House.
The Democratic candidate you haven't already heard of, that's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
This evening at 7. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Honolulu Waldorf School, offering an education that helps to foster clarity of thought, courage, and confidence, featuring an online auction fundraiser April 13th to 30th, honoluluwaldorf.org.
Mayor Kim, I know that you were just here on Oahu recently at the state legislature, along with the other county mayors, asking for the county's fair share of funding. And one of the items on your wish list is to raise the minimum wage. And I know in your testimony, you said you were struck because you didn't realize how many people in the county made less than $10.
Yeah, I guess that's not only county government, obviously, because we follow the same categories as far as classification and therefore standard pay, but the state is in the same position. And there's certain clerical, you know, position especially that are below the minimum, not below minimum, but below the proposed raise, and they make just barely above minimum wage. But, you know, regardless of the minimum wage issue, which I think we need to support, is the whole issue of what we're emphasizing here as far as lifestyle. I was, and, you know, not to pick on any, but I was at, as you said, Honolulu, and the mayors and I were talking, and I talked about the price of living here in Hawaii, and we should all be very concerned, and not just minimum wage, because the cost of living here, even for the middle income, whatever middle income is, you know, is not enough. I gave them I had a question and answer. I asked the mayors, what is the price of a single resident property cost? How big was it? Well, et cetera, et cetera. And like Oahu, I think, Maui, I think, well, this was some time ago, the example they gave, is about $350,000 just for the property that has water, roads, and power. In Kauai, we're talking about, you know, the property is a little bigger than Maui, but they were talking about $300,000 plus just for the property. For people on this island, especially on the east side and the south side of the island, that's an unbelievable amount, except for probably a very, you know, big properties or exclusive properties. And let's face it, to all our listeners, trying to make us understand the problem is not minimum wage. The problem is what have we done to Hawaii that has made living here unaffordable for, except for those that, you know, have more resources than whatever the average person is. And the average person that can't make it is not minimum wage. Average person is a police, a nurse, or people who work in finance or any occupation. Can you imagine who do you know can afford a down payment on a $300,000 lot in Kauai or $350,000 lot in Oahu and try to build a home on top of that? I from the very beginning, I said the goal was to make Hawaii a nice place to live. And it was contrary to make it just a nice place to visit first. And our focus here is make it a nice place to live so people can afford to live here.
There are folks who are concerned about the economy. You know, many folks are small business owners. We do have Brandon on the line from Hilo. You have a question for the mayor?
Yeah. Hi. Aloha, Mr. Mayor Kim. How are you?
I'm just fine, sir. Thank you.
Okay. So Kulana has been closed now for nearly 6 weeks because of the efforts of Melissa Harmon at Kamehameha School, Nicole at Kohala Centers, Tim Richards, Jason Muniz, Mike at the Hawaii Island Co-op, the Waimea Butcher Shop, and other local farmers. The inspector from the USDA from Denver is here on island today making a decision about Kulana. Whether they decide to reopen Kulana, what's the plan for the future for small animal agriculture? And if USDA does not allow Kulana to reopen, what is the plan as to continue the small island, the small animal industry here on the Big Island, specifically pigs, sheep, and goats? And then the third part of that is like, so is Hawaii agriculture a good or strong enough industry to be telling our youth to invest their futures in Hawaii agriculture?
First of all, I don't think I'm just to leave open in case I am. The choice of Kulana Foods to close their small animal slaughtering was theirs alone because they have a citation on violation of the way a certain animal is treated was being dragged off the truck. And again, based on that and the potential other problems, they felt that business-wise, it would be better for them to for now close it. So the federal authorities had nothing to do with that decision. However, the reason for it, obviously, is federal reasons as far as the treatment of animals during and after a slaughter. In regards to you are very right in the sense that that needs to be reviewed to see how this one last place of slaughtering of smaller animals for, I think, the entire east side to be closed is going to make it very difficult for people. And all I can say is right now, all I know is what I heard about it or read about it. And I think it warrants that we go contact Kulana Foods to see what their plans are because it will affect a lot of people. So I will do that.
All right. And we did have another call on the line, Pam from Captain Cook. She couldn't stay on the line, but she said she's concerned about the traffic around the area of Cam 3. She says it's aggravating and dangerous. She sees lots of accidents there. And she wants to know, when are we going to get new roads to improve this, especially during an emergency? There's no way for ambulances to get through.
First of all, for those who don't know what she's talking about, that's your Connect Road between the lower area of Ali Drive area and Kuikamano Highway on the Mauka side. And the connecting point was going to be what was going to be planned for what we call Ali Parkway. And as that goes way back many years, and the plans was all done, and even funding was there, except for we could not get by the requirements of the Hawaiian burial that required the highway not be built on where there were some burials. That is something that still needs to be pursued. There's no doubt that that intersection area, which is, controlled by traffic signal lights, et cetera, but it still is a real bottleneck for some areas. And right now, the only answer is to pursue Ali Parkway again. But I will say this, so people know from the very beginning, I did not want Ali Parkway to be a massive four-lane type highway. I feel that we will be creating huge problems as far as lifestyle to the people who live along the proposed route to have major highway divide the community in two parts. Whether we'll pursue it again, there is support in regards to we take a look at it, redesign it to see if somehow we can redesign it to comply with the Borough Council rules. This is not to put blame on Borough Council rules. Borough Council rules are right in their authority of what they did not want to be done. We propose to move some burials in a very good way, but there was not plan was by Borough Council. No, it had to be in place, which made that present plan not possible. So we have to basically start from scratch to find other ways to get around this bottleneck. But it is a bottleneck. I thank State Highway publicly here that many, many years ago, the county government put a state project of the highways connecting all of the lower area, Queen Kalamano Highway. You know, it's becoming a real good highway now, and connected roads as well. But this is the one area that we have to focus on, because what has happened is this, and the caller knows this. The traffic increase in that area has been tremendous for a simple reason. So many people now commute to work from South Kona. And, you know, when you have that in the same highway, it makes it for a very difficult situation. And a commute even extends for now people as far away as Kawoo to go to work in the resort areas and the commercial areas of the North Kona. And this will be addressed. I do not have the magic wand here, but I know what she's saying is absolute.
All right, we have another call from Volcano, from Daniel. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah, I was calling just to ask about what the status of the Puna Geothermal Venture was as far as getting operations started again. And then also to tie into the question from earlier about the cost of living in Hawaii, just for why would a 100% renewable power plant, why does the electricity cost so much at 55 cents a kilowatt?
First of all, I'll address the plans for PGV. We have had several discussions all along the way during the eruption on what their plans. So again, this is 100% private. They requested and got permission, you know, to go on private property, which was their responsibility, and gain access to it. What they are doing now is evaluating the damage done by the lava. There was no direct inundation done, but there was a lot of damage done because of fallouts from the ashes, as well as Pele's Hair, which is ashes too, I guess, and also earthquake problems, etc. Plus, one more thing that is a major thing for them to, you know, cross as far as a hurdle to get started again, and they haven't even really started anything yet except continued evaluation. And what that was you have certain operational wells that mitigation had to be done, because if the lava crossed over it and severed the production wells, there was a possibility and a high probability that if that was not mitigated, what would be released in the air would be uncontrolled hydrogen sulfide gas into the air and uncontrolled. So a good job was done by the state and PGV to seal all those wells. By sealing it, they had to pump literally sand and cement down a few thousand feet and a cap to seal it off, so in case the lava did hit the well, it would not release that toxic gas into the air. And now they have to redig or redrill. And so before you can do that, they got to evaluate that, et cetera, et cetera. I don't pretend to have any expertise on what they have to do. I'm just giving you general terms. And that is being done now. How long it will take them, or if they'll be successful in coming back, is all within their private jurisdiction. They do keep us informed. In regards to the cost of the power, oh, boy, that is middle in the Pacific Ocean. I think Hawaii County, as well as the state, is getting much, much better of renewable energy commitment by a certain year for the island of Hawaii, as well as the state. And hopefully with wind, hopefully with solar, you know, our cost of fuel will energies will go down.
If you're just joining us, our guest today is Hawaii County Mayor Harry Kim. Do you have a concern or issue that's top of mind that you want to bring up? Join the conversation by calling 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. That's 941-3689. We do have a call from Puna. Joshua, are you still on the line?
Yes, still here.
So what's your question?
So, yeah, I'm calling also back for people who are trapped from the lava flow. And so I'm not from the 132 group. I'm from the McKinsey side of the flow. And we have about a dozen neighbors in a small area who are living in the area just up Pohiki Road. We're about a third of a mile past where the lava flow crosses Pohiki. And so, so we're a smaller group, but the amount of bulldozing needed to get at least like a dozen people home is only a third of a mile of just this one corner of Pohiki. And because of opening up the beach and all of that, there's a lot of sightseers and people, you know, doing stuff around there and some looting and things going on. So a lot of the neighbors are really concerned about their homes to do with that. And a lot of the neighbors are elderly as well.
Absolutely. I hope you can trust us in that reevaluating. There's three roads that, as you know, caller knows, and all the people down there know that were affected. The 132. 137 and Pohiki Road. And Pohiki Road, as you know, is a narrow road in comparison to the other two. And we will have to, and right now we're going strictly on the priority of 1, 2, and 3. And number one was identified as Highway 132. As far as Pohiki Road, we understand you stated the numbers that are there. Right now, you know, I'll have to tell you it is not priority one because we stayed 132 and we have to evaluate what can or cannot be done. I do want to take this opportunity, you know, to explain something. When Kalapana erupted in 1990, there were hundreds or even thousands of lots that were cut off, just like here. We explained to them that we cannot and will not do any kind of repair work in regards to especially of roads with that, obviously the water system, which I don't think can be replaced at this point for most of the area because of the cost factor. But anyway, we have a responsibility to people in Lower Kalapana. This is the period they have been waiting for, a quiet period where we was, because this is the same eruption. We have to evaluate them also to see what roads we can commit to beginning the process of trying to go back. All I can say are the three roadways. 132 has been committed to as number of first priority. At this point, it will try to work with FEMA on a temporary roadway. A temporary doesn't mean rough and gravel, it means paved, but temporary means not back to federal highway standards, as you know, is quite strict. In regards to temporary, probably also for Highway 132, Pohiki Road at 137. I have no information released now. I need to handle 132 first and begin evaluation on what we can or cannot do in Kalapana. And we will do that, but I need people to understand the limited resources, which I know you're tired of that excuse, but that is, you know, what we need to do one by one.
We have a call coming in from Kona, Matt. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi, yeah, I was calling to see if we've looked in or if it's viable or legal to tax people as they land on the island. I know a lot of countries included in your price airline ticket, like $10, $15, $20 tax for every person that lands on the island. And it seems to me like that would be a good way to limit too much tourism, and also a simple way to gain tax revenue from them.
Thank you for that question. We had some technical difficulties there, but Mayor, there is this issue of overtourism, and in many communities across the state, it's become a very sensitive issue. So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, my thoughts is twofold. This is my home, and obviously you understand when place is your home, it's for a lot of reasons of being, you know, beauty of peace and warmth and to maintain a certain lifestyle, but we know we change. I have to, as mayor, you have to see things in balance and not to defend one over the other, but let's realize that without the resort industry, I think we saw a real small glimpse of that during the 911 issue. And we built an economy based on that. And when you do that, you have to realize anything that affects it really affects thousands of people. In regards to that, is not an excuse. That's a fact of what we have to make sure we deal with. I'll take this opportunity for Kona people. We're trying to work with resorts. As you know, Kona Iki was a controversial issue for about 14 years. And we finally, back when I first became mayor, ran into a guy who bought the property, a Bill McMorrow of Kennedy Wilson. We struck gold with him being the owner, and he helped us develop with the Kona people community the Kona Iki Park. And as you see, no hotels, no resorts of any kind. That's for 1 acre lots, golf course. He's making money, but he donated all of the oceanfront to the Hawaii Island people, where you can camp, we can drive on the beach and do what the old times used to do. Gave us part of the money to buy Ooma, so we have almost 2 miles of oceanfront. It's unbelievable in a pristine area that we'll never see high-rises there, but it still adds to the economy. And that's what we meant by trying to make it a nice place to live with resort. In regards to your specific ideas of charging people when they get off the plane, I've been to countries where I had to pay to get off the place. I thought that was really interesting. I had to pay X amount of money to get on a plane to get out. But that's an idea for the state to pursue. I can imagine the tremendous opposition by the resort industry. You know, you can't kill a goose, but I know that's a fact, but I don't want to kill the residents also by making this an impossible place to live. I'll say this with that. Take a look at most of the state of Hawaii, what we've created, and I think really the smart people with the community should really get together and discuss, is there a limit? And what is that limit? What kind of limit? What do we do to fairness? All of the questions that people in leadership, you know, must address.
And I think there is that quality of life issue, you know, as folks struggle to make a living, to buy a home, and folks, you know, are using vacation rentals as a way to support themselves. And yet, you know, that's creating a problem for affordable housing for many of our people across the state.
I'll disagree with you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not disagreeing for the point that, yes, some of them in regards to affordable housing, you know, using their house or whatever house to make it a vacation rental. The problem became a problem when it was not of that. The problem became a problem in Maui, Kauai, Hawaii Island, Oahu, when people utilized this as an avenue of making money, that it became a small business. And so people that had places would, you know, literally buy the place to create a vacation rental. All a vacation rental is a nice word for, you know, a small hotel. The truth of the matter on, you know, that I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of repercussions, but I say this publicly in regards to on Hawaii Island, and that's all I can speak on expertise of any kind, you know, what was created here, if you have a home and you live in it, you can make a bed and breakfast to subsidize. And that's a permitting element. It doesn't change a lifestyle because the owner lives there. If you have a home on this island that you want to rent a room for extra income and not lose your homeowner's classification, we change the law so you can do that. I am talking about people on vacation rentals that is created for a business factor that totally disrupts the lifestyle of people that was zoned residential. These are zoned residential areas that was made for homeowners that lived there. those are the rules and regulations we're making for this island, that that is not permitted. Our mistake is we did not try to push this through many years ago when it was not really a problem. This became a problem of Hawaii Island only in the past few years. And naturally, we tried to instill laws that does not penalize them much. But I do not accept the total reason of trying to subsidize their income. If that was the only reason, we would not have the mass influx of vacation rentals that we have now.
We did have Chris from Hawaiian Paradise Park on the line, but could not stay on the line with us, but raised this issue because of global warming and the increased risk that we're seeing with hurricanes. Should homeowners start building their own shelters, especially since there aren't enough shelters around the island, you know, to go around for everybody? And would they consider giving homeowners who do this a tax credit, a tax break?
That has been done in the past because retrofitting a home. In regards to relationship to global warming, I'm not smart enough to know what the specifics are, but I am aware enough to know that there is some climate change going on does affect, I'm sure, the cyclones and other phenomena. In regards to the wild, first of all, our zoning, we do have kind of strict rules in regards to retrofitting for wind, in regards to where you can build as far as for high surf and surge and flooding elements and things like that. But there is only a certain point that you can retrofit a home after it becomes almost unreasonable. I think if one pays attention today in retrofitting a home based on the building code we have now, because all the new homes has the new regulations, and it basically protects your home against X miles per hour winds. I think it's 80 or so miles per hour. We do have a lot of old homes that was built before the building code was passed, and those are the homes that they should really review or retrofit in. And I think that's where we can do the most good as far as protection of your home within reasonable costs.
And Mayor, is there anything that you would like to talk about? I know you had a list of priorities when you went to the legislature. What would you like to underscore?
I'm going to take advantage of your offer, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
I have the responsibility given to me by the governor in regards to Mauna Kea. I think a lot of us know about the controversy that is there and potentially what negative can happen. And I finished my vision for Mauna Kea with now that begins the public education. Hopefully people understand what I'm trying to do. You can stop me anytime. It's not, I want to read to you my vision for Mauna Kea that we are going to try to work with all the authorities, including astronomers, et cetera, to implement this vision, because the implementation obviously is the work. I read to you vision for Mauna Kea. Mauna Kea to be a symbol of the Native Hawaiian culture, past, present, and future, a cultural and natural treasure. This is about the protection and preservation of the historical and cultural specialness of this land, the most precious and beautiful of places and its people. A central theme of Mauna Kea should be of the Native Hawaiians' exploration of the ocean to the discoveries of the universe. Hawaiians understood how the world was connected from the mountain to the sea. They explored the ocean and learned about the heavens to guide them. They learned that this majestic mountain is the Earth's connected point to the rest of the universe. This is about the mountain being part of their soul. This is about the mountain bringing people together. This is what Mauna Kea can be for the world. Mauna Kea to be a symbol of the nations working together for the pursuit of peace and harmony, a beacon of hope and discovery for the world. This is not just about science. It is about combining culture and science. It is about respect and caring. It is about a quest for knowledge that will make us a better people and better stewards of this world. Mauna Kea to be a symbol of Native Hawaiian heritage and the inseparability of nature and culture. Mauna Kea to be a recognition of a deeply painful history of intrusions on the First Nation of Hawaii, which today are reflected in issues such as Mauna Kea. It was so wisely said, quote, the world will turn to Hawaii as a search for world peace, because Hawaii has a key, and that key is aloha. End of quote, Enti Pilahi Paki said in 1970. Mauna Kea to be a symbol for the world of a cosmopolitan people, people of the world, where diversity is respected and celebrated. Mauna Kea to be a model of science and of culture going forward. Mauna Kea to be an opportunity for the gift of aloha to be presented to the world. And on my vision and the initiatives are in a separate section. We will work with all people involved to see how we can make something good out of Mauna Kea instead of a confrontation, which we seem to be headed.
Yes, and I know it's a very emotional issue on both sides. What is the next deadline coming up?
Well, I think the deadline in regards to besides my work, which it depends on deadline also, is, as you know, the courts that appeal process that I know of has stated that the permit given by the state to the 30-meter scope is approved and legitimate and has followed all rules and regulations. I'm not saying I'm agreeing with it. I'm just answering the question, you know, that the legal process has been completed. Their deadline is now a financial one. With my last meeting with the people of the five countries that is supported this telescope, there's five countries that should involve the United States, Japan, Canada, India. And I think in their last meeting, they stated to me that they have a financial obligation and they would like to have a definitive, they're going or not going within themselves by the end of March.
Okay. All right, Mayor. We will be watching. Thank you so much again for spending time with us. We'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. And if your call didn't make it on air during today's discussion, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.